Mini episode 1632 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1632. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris here today. And we have with us one of our favorite FDH Lounge dignitaries, my good pal, Steve Callis from the Callis Remarks podcast with Joe Stazak. You can find that wherever you find your podcasts. And the YouTube version is certainly always a great one. And the sports editor at the Westchester County Post, westchestercountypost.com. And we're here at the midpoint, just past the midpoint of the 2023 MLB season, taking a look back, taking a look forward at all the different things in both leagues that are popping out at us, or perhaps I should say both conferences, because at this point in time, is it really American League, National League, as opposed to American Conference, National Conference? I might be, get off my porch guy, and you're going to hear a little bit of that, I think, as we go along here from both of us. But with the National League this year having the DH full-time and everything else like that, you can't really find any distinctions here like you used to. None of the hardcore hatred of that there used to be in the All-Star Games competitiveness. I've had a lot of the old All-Star Games popping up on YouTube for me recently here. The algorithm saw fit to suggest those to me. And back when it was actually really a special event, such that you probably could have put it on. They didn't really have pay-per-view back then, but at least closed circuit versus today. The numbers keep getting smaller every year for it. But, of course, there has been a little bit of an uptick, I think, this year in baseball with some of the ratings as far as the changes put in to speed up the game. Although, as we pointed out before the season, I think Steve Callis pointing this out. Yeah, notice they weren't losing any 30-second beer commercials in between half innings to do this here. It was just when the game was going. So.
They still can. Rick. But
they can. Yeah, but nobody has anything to take money out of their pocket. So a look back, a look ahead. I know we both have some things to talk about here, Steve Callis.
Yeah, well, big picture, and great to be with you as always, but big picture, I have to admit that I picked the Padres to beat the Braves in the World Series.
Okay.
Padres to beat the Rays in the World Series.
Okay.
And now I'm going to have to change that to the Braves to beat the Rays in the World Series. I have to say, when you look at the Rays and what they do every year, they're always there. They've never gotten over the hump. I would like to talk in a minute briefly on my guy Blake Snell, who to this day, Kevin Cash will tell you, when he took him out of Game 6 in the 2020 World Series, where he was pitching, I think, the best game he had ever pitched in the major leagues. And I recently read an article where he said afterwards that I did not know, that he was confused that they were warming somebody up that day. And in my view, Rick, tell me if you agree, to this day, Blake Snell has not recovered, although I'm going to make a pitch for him now as having recovered finally, because he was 15-16. With 2 years with San Diego, the 2 years after the 2020 World Series. Now, of course, this is his third year. I think he's a free agent after this. I'm not sure. But in any event, I have to put the Braves at the top. I mean, they hit so many home runs. The home runs are like video game numbers now compared to, for example, I wasn't sure who holds the, there's a record out there, five guys with 30 or more home runs. It was the Twins from 2019.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at the numbers, Mitch Garver, Eddie Rosario, Miguel Sano, who's a good home run hitter, Max Kepler, and of course Nelson Cruz is a good home run hitter. This year the Braves might have six guys do it.
Yeah.
Matt Olson, okay. Ronald Acuna Jr., okay. Ozuna is a good home run hitter. Sean Murphy, Ozzy Albiz, Austin Riley. I mean, they got a ton of guys. These things were unbelievable. I think I remember the Yankees having four or five guys who hit 20.
Mm-hmm.
And they made a big deal about it. But the Braves, to me, have just been incredible. I mean, they've just been incredible. You know, Max Fried is finally coming back. And Kyle Wright, who I think won 20, 21 games last year, he's not coming back till September.
Mm-hmm.
Those two combined had 35 wins last season for the Braves. And this year, they have five starts apiece and have won just two games. And the two games were won by Max Fried, who started like five games at the beginning of the year. And now he's just coming back now. I think he threw one bullpen session. I think he's throwing five innings sometime this week. And if they get him back, I mean, to me, they're going to be unbeatable. Acuna has a chance for MVP. You know that record he set, the fastest guy ever, to 40 stolen bases and 20 home runs in the history of baseball.
Right.
He did it in 84 games. I mean, they're loaded, and I don't think they're going to go backwards. Although, I remember, I think they used to be in the NL East, right? Didn't they win like 14 titles in a row, and they only won one World Series?
Yeah.
I don't put that on this Braves team.
Well, please don't remind me who that came against.
I can't remember, so I won't say. How about that?
Thank you. You're kind.
So I'm going to switch to the Braves over Tampa Bay. I always like Tampa Bay. I think I picked them to win it all either last year or the year before with you guys at the beginning of the year.
Uh-huh.
But in any event, I think they're clearly the team to beat. And I think Tampa, who, by the way, I don't know if you knew this, I did not. By percentage points, the Orioles have now overtaken Tampa Bay for first place in the NL East, in the AL East. And who would have thought anyone would go by Tampa Bay? And then who would have thought it would be the Orioles? Granted, they were good last year, and they're getting better. But boy, they've really, we always used to say, what, the Orioles are in the wrong division. And the question is, are the Yankees and the Red Sox in the wrong division? So I'll let you take it from there for a while. But it's shocking to me.
Yeah, well, my heart bleeds for those plucky underdogs, the Yankees and the Red Sox, being in the division with them. But, a couple things there. Baltimore and Texas, the big surprise stories of the American League, both of them were teams you could see coming. But, again, this year, I didn't think either one of them would take the step up this year. They did. It's so funny you say that you had to back off of one of your two picks for the World Series, with it being Tampa Bay and San Diego. And I had Tampa Bay making it to the American League Championship Series. I, too, have to back off of one of my World Series picks because I had it being Atlanta over Houston. And Houston is having a classic World Series hangover season right now, albeit, again, could still make the playoffs. And who wants to play them if they do? Nobody. So the book is not closed on them. But this is a thing where it's so funny, like if it comes down to Atlanta and Tampa Bay, because it's occurred to me in recent years that because both of them have been in the picture here, both of them have made the World Series in recent years, Tampa Bay unsuccessfully, Atlanta successfully. And I've thought to myself that it would be an interesting thing if they met up, and if they do, and I do agree with you, I think it's most likely at this point now, that's the matchup I'd go with. In looking at it, because it reminds me a little bit, I love cross-sport analogies, and this is one of these things where the NBA Finals this year, Denver and Miami, I've spoken about this on the show, I've written about it on FantasyDraftHelp.com, the FDATLounge.com, is that Denver and Miami, that's the future of the NBA. I don't know if this is the future of baseball or not, but player development. Player development is going to become one of these things that's really, really huge in the NBA, way more so than it's ever been, now that this second apron in the new CBA is going to be a de facto hard cap. How you fill out the rest of your roster, 7, 8, 9, 10 in the rotation here. Hey, it's one of the reasons I'm so excited. Go Cavs, Summer League champs, baby. And maybe getting a couple of guys can help fill out that rotation. Atlanta and Tampa Bay, they are where they are because, again, particularly in the case of Atlanta, with being owned by Liberty Media, they do have the money to be able to put in to retain guys. Tampa Bay is still in more of the churn because of their financial situation. But Atlanta and Tampa Bay are a lot like Denver and Miami in the NBA. They are player development success stories on a huge level.
I totally agree with that, and I think you're right. Atlanta has been good and will be good. Tampa has been good. The problem for Tampa, again, has to me, they've never gotten over the hump. And I'm not going to tell you when Blake Snell was pitching Game 6 in the 2020 World Series that they were going to win.
Mm-hmm.
But it sure kind of looked like, you know, Kevin Cash said, "Oh, Mookie Betts coming up for the third time," or whatever he said. I forget the exact quote, but yeah. He said he'd do it again. He got Pete Carroll disease. You know, we'll throw the ball again down there with Russell Wilson. No, these guys have, I followed the, you know, third time through the batting order.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we could have fooled them with a pass there. No, the only way you could have lost the Super Bowl was the pass there. That's all.
Yeah.
But whatever, it's an interesting thing. I did want to drill down now. Blake Snell is on the Padres, and they have virtually no chance. They're going to need miracles. The Mets are going to need miracles. To me, the Yankees are going to need miracles. I don't know that Judge is a miracle, but he's clearly – you can make a case for him as MVP when he didn't play.
Yeah.
But let me just give you this on Blake Snell. This is so interesting to me because I saw him pitch – I don't know, like 10 days ago, he looked lights out. I'm like, oh my goodness, Blake Snell lights out. On May 19th of this year, he was 1-6 with a 5.40 ERA. So I throw out the question immediately, can a guy who's 1-6 on May 19th with a 5.40 ERA win the Cy Young Award? And now I'll tell you that today, he is 6-7 with a 2.71 ERA in his last 10 starts. He's given up 4 runs in 58 innings. He has a whip less than 1. He has 91 strikeouts in those 10 starts. So suddenly I'm like, you know what? I think he has a chance. I'd love to know, and I tried to find articles, I'd love to know what changed. Because it goes back last year and the year before, because again, he's a sub-500 pitcher last year and the year before, and was 1-6 on May 19th this year.
Yeah.
I believe he's a free agent, so he's certainly timing it well. But I just thought I'd point that out, because Blake Snell has always been a favorite of mine. He's a lefty, of course, so I love lefties.
Yep.
But he's really turned it around. Is that going to turn it around enough for San Diego to get in the wild card? And then, as you say, there'll be another team you don't want to play.
Yeah.
But I don't know if they're going to get there. I just don't know. It would be a huge climb.
It's interesting with Blake Snell that if we get that San Diego Tampa Bay World Series, after all, once again, cross sport analogy here, or, you know, for him to in a revenge outing here to become World Series MVP, shades of who? Jonathan Marchessault in the Stanley Cup final here for Vegas against Florida, the team that let him go. A slightly different reason for revenge, but still. So, you know, it's one of those things where, one of the things that could be the tipping point in a lot of this on who can get over the top here, if any of these contenders are able to make a deal that you and I agreed off air should happen for Shohei Ohtani, because he is not going to re-sign with the Angels. And I don't think they would want to pay him $500 million, even if they could, because the thing with Artie Moreno is he's just been wedded to the Stars and Scrubs thing, which I know I joke about this all the time on the show, but that is such an L.A. phenomenon the last couple of years. The Lakers, the Chargers, the Rams, even when they won the Super Bowl, were like a glorified version of Stars and Scrubs. The Angels exemplify it most of all. By the way, the Dodgers are moving towards Stars and Scrubs here, as they have sort of deteriorated from where they were at, a prime candidate to get Ohtani. And this is a thing where, again, I know that, again, people have made very elevated claims and comparisons vis-a-vis Ohtani and what Babe Ruth did back in the day. And I think, again, he occupies a very unique and highly decorated space in baseball history for what he's doing. But I know you think that, and I would agree with you on some of the praise that's out there, particularly at the expense of Babe Ruth going too far.
Well, again, my concern is Ruth did play a lot of games and pitch a decent amount for 2 years, 1918, 1919. I'll get back to Ohtani and whether they should trade him, because I don't think Artie Moreno wants to be the guy who traded Babe Ruth a second time. Because
mm-hmm.
that's what you can argue that's what Ohtani is today. I don't disagree with that, but I just want to say, in 1918, he played 95 games. He was a pitcher and a hitter. He started 19 games and completed 18 of them. So presumably the other 75 or so he played in the field. Keep in mind, by the way, no DH for Babe Ruth. Just throwing that out there, Rick.
Right.
But he led the majors with 11 home runs. I understand people will say, oh, 11 home runs. But he also led the majors in OBP, .411, slugging .555, OPS, .966. And in pitching, he was 13-7 with a 2.22 ERA. with, again, starting 19 games, completing 18. To me, that's incredible. In 1919, where he played 130 games, now you know back then they played 154, in 130 games, he led the league with 29 home runs, which, by the way, led the majors. All this is led the majors. By the way, became the all-time record. The prior record was 27. And as you know, the next year when he was a Yankee, he hit 54 and then 59. So he's the Mr. Record Holder. But he led the majors in 1919. 29 homers, 113 RBIs, 103 runs scored. He hit 322 and then led the majors in OBP 456, slugging 657, OPS 1.114, and he was 9-5 with a 2.97 ERA and completed 12 of the 15 games he started. We haven't even talked about the World Series because you may, if Ohtani stays in Los Angeles with the Angels, I think he'll never play in the World Series. We talked about this when Mike Trout signed there. Why was he? I thought he was going to Philly. Joe Stezek was like, he's a Philly fan. He lives and grew up in South Jersey and boo, 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 boo. And somehow he decided to go there. And Ohtani has said over and over, I want to win, I want to win, I want to win. Well, if you want to win and you're going to be able to write your check, I can't see how it's with the Angels. But getting back just briefly to Ruth, so I love Ohtani. Everybody's right. What he's doing is like Ruth. Some people are saying much better than Ruth. I just gave you the 2 years. It seems to me, it's kind of like, to me, Oscar Robertson with triple doubles.
Right.
Oscar never even knew what a triple double was. If he was told a triple double was a big thing, would he have gotten more? Maybe. It's like Mickey Mantle. When the first time somebody went 40-40, Mickey Mantle says, I wish I knew. I could have done that.
Right.
And these guys are super-duper stars. I don't view them to be bragging. It just like wasn't a thing. So as great as Ohtani is, I just read you all the stuff that Ruth led the league in. And don't forget, he was 3-0 in the World Series. He held the World Series record of consecutive scoreless innings. He gave up an inside-the-park home run at Fenway Park to High Myers of the Brooklyn Robins. I think it was in 1916. He's 3-0 in the World Series. And after that run, he had his streak was like 29 2/3 innings because he only pitched three games, but one of them, I think, was like 13 innings or something that he won the game 1-0 or something.
Right.
So nothing against Ohtani, and you'll tell me it's harder, of course, to lead the league and fill in the blank. But the guy's never led the league, either pitching or hitting, in anything but triples and caught stealing.
Right.
And his early years here, I think I told you his record, he was 4-2 his first year as a pitcher. He was 0-1 the second year. I don't know if he played the whole year in the field, but he only had like 3 or 4 starts as a pitcher. And now 9-2, 15-9 this year. He's 7-5. Not knocking the guy at all. You can make a case for him as MVP. I know you made a case for him last year as MVP.
Yeah.
I disagreed because the judge and his 62 homers was such a freakish thing. I think that's the all-time home run record. It's
sure.
Not a Yankee bias. If anybody hits 63 in either league this year, I'll say they're the all-time home run record.
Sure.
But I just think it's interesting. And the final thing on Ohtani to me, it's almost like you have to trade him. And I'm afraid that if they don't trade him, because he doesn't want to be the guy who trades Ohtani, because it'll be like Harry Frazee, the guy who sold, I think he sold Ruth for like $125,000 or whatever. But the flip side of that is if you don't trade him and he walks, you get a draft pick, right? You make him that offer.
Yeah.
That offer you have to make, and you get a draft pick. And if you get a draft pick for Ohtani, I mean, that's probably the worst deal since Babe Ruth.
Pretty much, yeah. You know, by the way, more cross-sport analogies here. When you talk about selling players, the only thing Charlie Finley apparently did wrong was not owning the modern-day Washington Wizards, because apparently based on the deals there, you can just give away Bradley Beal to Phoenix. You can just, not that I'm bitter about it, give away Porzingis to Boston.
We're waving the white flag, or we're going total rebuild, I guess.
Not even getting anything back. I mean, the Porzingis deal was the worst one I saw since the Pau Gasol giveaway to the Lakers back in the day, which made me pretty bitter at the time. But, you know, in looking at this, I will say, when you're talking about Ohtani and Ruth and these, you know, these numbers and comparing them across time and trying to go apples to apples and this kind of stuff, Doesn't it remind us all of that memorable time when the one sports writer congratulated Babe Ruth? Ah, Babe, you led the league in WAR this year. And I think, what was Babe's response? Something like, oh, yeah, and I took out a lot of Germans along the way, Shorty. You know, you know, in looking at this, yeah, I mean, Ohtani is somebody that can tip the scale here potentially. It is a pathetic sign of the ownership of certain teams, not least of which my Cleveland squad here, that when you're seeing a list of teams to be in there to potentially trade for him, nobody's mentioning a Cleveland amongst them, even though that's obviously the smart move to make at this point in time. You want to go over to Hump. By the way, I said Indians in my prediction prior to the season here, Fantasy Baseball Draftology, available on the main page at fantasydrafthelp.com, still available there. I predicted Indians to win the Central with 83 wins, which some people probably thought was way low, and most people would have said that, and now it looks like it's way high based on the pathetic way that the AL Central is playing out. But, you know, again, all of the wild card spots are going to come out of the East and the West. You could get all of them coming out potentially of the East here. I mean, you don't have to squint too hard to see that. So knowing your traditionalist views on things here, Steve Callis, I look forward to what our World Series preview is going to be. If there's a team that finished fourth in their division that has a chance to win the World Series.
I think whoever finishes fourth does have a chance if they make the playoffs. Again, you don't want to play any of those teams. And this is the Yankees, who are in last place. These are the Yankees without Aaron Judge, and I'll say it again. I think you can almost make a case for Aaron Judge for MVP this year if he comes back and kills it, because they have been horrifically, historically terrible since he got hurt. When you look at the batting averages of all these guys who are big-time major leaguers, you know, Donaldson tore his hamstring, he might be done as a Yankee, and people cheered when he was limping down the line or limping off the field.
Yeah.
He's been that bad. I think he's got 15 hits the whole year and 10 are homers. I mean, it's so weird. Stanton woke up a little, but he's hitting like 200. And worst of all, and I love him, Rizzo, their lefty power, Rizzo hasn't hit a home run in 42 games. And since Judge was hurt, I think Rizzo's hitting like 140 or 150 or something.
Right.
And there's five or six other guys. And then you see a guy, I guess we should at least mention this, Herman throws a perfect game. The two games before he threw a perfect game, he gave up 17 runs, 15 earned. Yeah. I remember one of them yelling at the TV, take the guy out. He's given up eight earned runs. And I guess he took one for the team. He did pitch a perfect game, so you give him credit. But it's so weird. Perfect games, when you look at the list of perfect games, it's not like there's 24 now. It's not like 20 of those guys are Hall of Famers. You know, there's like 10 guys to go, who?
Well,
he threw a perfect game.
Walk. I mean, Len Barker will never have to buy a beer in a bar in this town the rest of his life. But again, you know the way it goes, right? I mean, you know, folk hero for what he did. He came 1 year after Joe Charbonneau and is basically in the same kind of lightning in a bottle kind of a thing here, you know, in much the same way. So, yes, that's the nature of the beast. The list of perfect game throwers is extraordinarily fluky when you look at it. There is no doubt about that. So, We've had that happening. And then, again, you look at the National League, and, again, similarly, a little bit in the way of, you know, some surprise teams. You know, you've got a Miami team that's, you know, showing a little bit more life than we expected. San Francisco, again, looking more like they did 2 years ago, but doing it in a more sustainable way, I think, with their farm system really playing a role here as well. Arizona, who I saw coming and said would be in the playoffs this year, they've been a surprise. Certainly San Diego on the negative side here as well. And then, again, Philadelphia, you figured once they got healthier that they might kind of come on as they did last year. Looks like we're seeing that play out. The Mets, obviously, are the skid mark of Major League Baseball thus far relative to expectations. Some might say St. Louis, but all they were was a decent candidate to win their own division. I don't think hardly anybody had St. Louis coming out of the National League.
Right.
Yep. It's funny because earlier in the year, Pittsburgh, the whole how are they doing it kind of a thing, well, we saw that wasn't sustainable, but in their place, and there's not really the question of how they're doing it because much like Texas in the American League, although Texas is also being propped up by, obviously, you know, you look at Seager and Semien and some of the guys they're spending money on, but Cincinnati, the wave of young players rising to the top right now in that division. One of the real feel-good stories in baseball with Ellie De La Cruz. So the National League has had plenty of interesting stories, good and bad, to this point as well.
You're absolutely right. I did want to mention Luis Arraez yes. and his quest for 400, which, you know, I think you're tilting at windmills every year whenever anybody goes quick.
Totally agree.
But as ESPN pointed out before the All-Star break, just to give you a sense of how tough it is, he had hit in 18 of the previous 20 games up to the All-Star break, including two of those games where he went 5-for-5. Yet, in those 20 games, his average dropped from 388 to 383.
Yeah.
Now, he's played six games since the All-Star break, and his average has dropped from 383 to 376. During the All-Star break, I don't know if it was an Elias Sports View calculation, but on ESPN, they put in his final 71 games. The other thing, you know, when you talk about records at the All-Star break, Rick, you got to be very careful, because Arraez, for example, had played 91 games. And a lot of teams play a lot more than 81. 81 is half a season. That's what I'd rather hear than at the All-Star break.
Yes.
But they put up a thing in the last 71 games for Arraez to hit 400. Keep in mind now, it's 91-71. It's not 81-81, right? It's not if you hit 390 the first half, you got to hit 410 the second. No. Arraez in the final 71 games, and again, his average has dropped 7 points since the All-Star break, so it's got to be worse now. He would have to have hit 431 for his last 71 games, and I'm sorry, that's virtually impossible.
It's not happening.
Impossible.
Yeah.
So I did want to mention him because I love to watch him play. I love his approach. He's got a total. He's not worried about launch angles or home runs or any of that stuff. He just wants to put the ball in play. And, you know, he runs well, of course, blah, blah, blah. But I don't think it's possible. And we all get excited, or at least I do, April, May, you know. Oh, my goodness, he's hitting 403.
Right.
But I think the guy, if it's ever going to happen, Rick, I think the guy at the beginning of September is going to have to be hitting like 412 or something.
Totally agree.
That he has to, right, and that's virtually impossible to go through the end of August hitting above 400. But, those are my thoughts on those guys. But, you know, you pointed out some good sleepers. I love Cincinnati in terms of what they've done and what they had done. And they had done a lot of it without Joey Votto, and then he came back and jumped right in, you know, because I'm going to be at Cincinnati forever, and God bless him for that. I don't think he's going to win a World Series either. He's like Mike Trout. And one more on Ohtani. Again, I don't think when they had Trout and Rendon, who's been hurt like most of the time also, I said, you put Ohtani, the lefty, up third, and you go Trout, Ohtani, Rendon. I think that's the best 2-3-4 in baseball. But they're becoming like the Brooklyn Nets or all those teams that Kyrie is on with the big three.
Yep.
They played like 20 games together.
Yeah.
If that, with Ohtani, Trout, and Rendon, because now Rendon, Trout has the broken hand. So I really think they're done. I don't think they have any chance to make the playoffs. And, oh, by the way, if they made the wild card, I don't know if that would be enough for Ohtani, because he knows with that team he can't win the World Series. And I think that's what he wants to do. And he's already made a lot of money, and he's not going to be able to count. He's going to get a bigger than Trout contract, I believe. And they already announced they won't trade him to the Dodgers, but that doesn't mean if they keep him, he won't walk to the Dodgers, because they're one of the teams, and they're on the West Coast. I don't know if that's a big thing to him. You know, Ichiro loved it in Seattle because it was closer for him to go home. But he wound up with the Yankees for a couple of years, as you'll remember. So we'll have to see what happens. But if he wants to win, the pickings are slim. Atlanta won't pay him $50 million a year. I think the Dodgers will. I think they will.
Yes.
But there's not much else. Is he going to play for the Yankees? He won't go to the Mets now. They look like they can't win. And they're already talking. I don't know if you heard this. They're already talking about maybe trading either Verlander, who pitched great last night, or Scherzer, who pitched great 3 days ago, but combined they're like, they're a little over 500, and their ERA is like 3.9 or something combined for $86 million. So I don't look at the Mets or Yankees as teams who can win a World Series. I look at the Mets and Yankees from an Ohtani standpoint as teams with a ton of money. But if he wants to win, to me, it's either the Rays would never pay him, the Braves would never pay him, but the Dodgers, I think, would pay him. So I think that's the logical, and that'll kill Angels fans, right? That'll kill the Angels owner as well.
Right.
Because they're already the number two team. They never make the playoffs. Trout's been there once, so Ohtani's never been there. And I remember Trout vividly when he was in the playoffs. He couldn't hit a high fastball. And if you ever go back and watch video of that, he was terrible because they throw him high fastballs. He kills. I always said he batted like a lefty, Trout. He's righty, but he kills low fastballs.
Right.
Kills them. But he learned how to hit a high fastball, and that's why he's one of the, what, 15 or 20 greatest players ever when you look at his career. I know he's had a lot of injuries now,
yeah.
But he's incredible. But you know what? This is not basketball, Rick. This is to look, you got two of the best players in the game, Ohtani and Trout.
Yeah.
And they've had no luck for 5 years, and now it's going to be 6 years.
Yeah, they've had no luck together, and it's one of those things. But when you look at it with the Mets, and you mentioned Verlander, it's one of those things. And this is rapidly turning into, in this segment here, the drinking game of take a shot every time Rick makes another cross-sports analogy. But I'm about to, because my thoughts on Steve Cohen the last year have been very similar to, and here's a sentence I don't think anybody's ever said, have been similar to my thoughts on Daryl Morey in Houston. And I'll explain why. Because you go back to the time of James Harden and Chris Paul.
Yep.
And unfortunately, with my voice being a little bit jacked up, it's going to stop me from doing my mocking voice in the way that I generally like to. But everybody at the time was like, oh my God, he's reinventing basketball by putting James Harden and Chris Paul together. You know what it was? He had Harden and Paul was available. And he did
yep.
that. It was one of those things. It was not any kind of master plan or whatever. And like every time the Mets have made a major acquisition the last couple of years, it has felt to me like they saw a guy, they wanted to bring him in, and it wasn't necessarily like, oh, I think it fits with the rest of what we're doing. Because in the case of Verlander, I don't think it's 20/20 hindsight to say that, you know, with Scherzer there, you already had a guy who was really kind of getting up there in age, albeit both of
yep.
them shockingly effective. Well beyond shockingly effective for their ages, but the moves they've made the last couple of years have just kind of struck me less of a plan of like, and then we're going to go try and get this kind of guy, and then we're going to go try and get this kind of a guy. It's like they see the shiny object out there and they decide just to kind of bring it in. And I'm not saying that's the reason they're falling apart this year, but I had seen them from the outside looking in more so as a collection of players than as a team. And that can be fatal to a team. So I'm not saying I was necessarily right to think that. I'm just saying that was my intuition, and we see how it's played out on the field this year.
Well, I think that's totally right. I mean, you look at a guy like Lindor. He drives in a lot of runs. He's playing an okay, not great shortstop. He's hitting .230 or less now. And even a guy like Alonso missed a home run, right? He's got like 26 at the break. He's two for... He broke his 1-for-28 slide yesterday, and,
mm-hmm.
and now the announcers are, oh, well, maybe he's turned it around with that single to right field to drive in the second run when the Mets were losing 6-1. Now it's 6-2. And, hey, maybe they're right, but, you know, the individuals they have on paper are incredible as a team, and now especially with the pitching, because I thought, and, you know, everything I say nowadays is, comma, if healthy, I thought if Scherzer and Verlander were healthy, and they've been fairly healthy, Verlander missed a month, they've been fairly healthy, but they're 38 and 40, respectively. Verlander's 40. But he did win the Cy Young coming off of Tommy John. That's pretty incredible last year, as you know.
Right.
And Scherzer's still Scherzer. I mean, they're both first ballot Hall of Famers, but I don't know, even if they go lights out now the rest of the year, which would be surprising, but they are pitching better, the Mets, are they generating offense today? I don't know. Let's go flip a coin. And so that's, you know, and when you look at the averages around the league, it's not just the Mets. Look at the Yankees. They got, you know, Donaldson was hitting 160. Stanton is like right at 200. Rizzo hit, I think, 11 home runs in his first 40 games and none in his next 40 or whatever the numbers are like that. They really fell apart without Judge. Would they be much better if Judge played? They'd be better. I don't know how much better because... You know, now both teams are saying, well, when we pitch well, we don't hit, and when we hit well, we don't pitch. Oh, okay. Now what?
Yeah.
So they were supposed to be like the big timers this year, again, with the Braves and the Rays and the Dodgers, but it certainly hasn't happened. And frankly, I don't think it's going to happen, at least for the New York teams.
No, I don't think they're going to flip the switch. And I do think in looking at it here, again, it's one of those situations where, you know, the way that you construct your teams and the amount of thought that you put into it obviously matters. And that is something where, you know, that may or may not, again, factually be coming back to bite the Mets. And a lot of that comes down to, you know, your perspective. Your mileage may vary on how much you think that has to do with what's happening to them this year, but they were certainly unprepared for things to go the way that they did. Now, dealing with shorter-term contracts here with Scherzer and Verlander, they're not necessarily a good example of the downside here, but I'm going to cite that anyways because Ohtani is going to be about at that age by the time he gets through his inevitable 10-year, $500 million contract with whomever. And there was a great article, and I wish I could give exact credit. I think I read it in The Ringer, but somebody did a breakdown of it and said, look, is Ohtani going to be pitching past age 34, 35? Probably not. And when he's just a hitter in his mid to late 30s, and again, I think he's going to hold up, you know, really well, but it's like you look at it, and I mean, I think, and the funny thing is, for a guy who's going to be leaving Anaheim, what is one of the greatest sunk cost contracts of all time in baseball history? Pujols. I would say Miguel Cabrera as well. I mean, those, the back end of those deals were fugly as hell, my man. So you're the same thing potentially with Ohtani. You best graze while the eating is good in the first 5 or 6 years on a deal like that. So whoever goes with him, and again, that might be, when I talk about the Dodgers being a little bit more stars and scrubs this year, they might be saving up for that, for the sense of being able to pay him next year. And I could see that being the case. Certainly, they're still a very dangerous team. And, you know, even if they make the playoffs, I mean, they're not as great as they've been the last couple of years. But, again, I agree with what you've said. I mean, Atlanta certainly looks like the class of the National League the way that they have been, and looked very, you know, similar to, and at this point, I even say better than the team of 2021. I mean, they're looking like a better version of what they were. Keep in mind that they didn't even have Acuna for the back end of that year. So you expect them to be a much better team when you plug in one of the best players in baseball. And what he's been doing with what will be probably an unprecedented power and speed year in baseball, it is one of these things emblematic of, we talked about it at the outset, some of the alterations that were made as far as in all to improve the watchability of the game, which I think it has helped in that way. And I think it is something that, again, bleeding younger viewers, younger everything, as they have been for a long time, but particularly with these attention, you know, crazed Zoomers here that can't focus on anything past 3 seconds, I think it has helped as far as making it more of a watchable game, less of a three true outcomes, because not only are you putting the pitch count in there to shorten the game by outlawing the more extreme versions of the shift, where you have to have, you know, the guys on either side of the field now, where that's being enforced. And then also with the whole thing with the inability to do endless pickoffs, encouraging steals, making the bases bigger. It is something where we all knew that steals were going to go up a lot this year. Nevertheless, I mean, it's been jarring to kind of see. And that in some ways, you are getting effects of, like, from 1968 to 69, the changes in the game. You are kind of seeing, I think, on that same kind of scale this year, the differences in the game from last year to this year.
I totally agree with that. And I should mention Spencer Strider on the Braves, because he's 11-3. And boy, is he a real good pitcher. And again, they haven't even gotten back Max Fried, who is coming soon. But every time you look at them, you just, like, shake your head, because they got dangerous guys in the lineup and they got excellent pitching. And I think they're easily, again, you get a half a year, I guess, to judge this as opposed to the beginning of the season. I thought they were one of the best teams at the beginning of the season, but I do think they're the best team now, and I think it's by pretty far. I mean, to run off in the NL East as they have is, to me, you know, incredible.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, and the core guys being homegrown, it's a circumstance where they actually lost Dansby Swanson this past year. They let him go in free agency. And one of the bigger pieces from the outside, and I'm talking here primarily starting lineup, because I know closer, you know, they've had a tendency to go outside to do, because that's a harder position to get the right guy. But, like, in that lineup, Matt Olson from the outside, but replacing homegrown Freddie Freeman, who they didn't want to pay, so Olson came cheaper than the homegrown guy to hang on to. So that kind of makes my point for me, is that you know, they have done it with almost unmatched player development the last couple of years in baseball. You're seeing Atlanta and Tampa Bay. Certainly, they've been the perennial stories here. I know you don't like Houston at all, but you will readily concede, because you're a fair man, that they fit that same bill. Houston is nothing if not a player development success story. San Diego has been, with the way that they've kind of grown. Now, they've added in a lot of pieces. They've spent a lot of money from the outside. I'm not oblivious to that, but they got to the point of being able to add these four or five mega pieces by first having the base of player development there. So when you're looking at Cincinnati, who was just at the outset of their run, Baltimore, hey, maybe we get a 1970 nostalgia World Series one of these years, huh, with the Big Red Machine and the Orioles. Probably not this year, but it might not be too far off. With Texas, the way that they're building, and again, some of it has been from spending money to augment and I'd say speed up the process. They've done exactly what they wanted to do when they spent the money, because they have sped up the process. But it's one of these things.
Well, you're right, but just don't forget DeGrom.
DeGrom, yeah.
They paid him through the nose, and true. You know, he's out for the season again. One of the greatest pitchers ever, I think, when he's healthy, but yep. He's healthy for such a short period of time. But no, I'm saying, I think they, so when they got the middle infielders last year, Simeon, Seager, I was like, they still have no pitching. But their pitching was better this year. And that's without DeGrom. Evaldi has been, like, unbelievable.
I got to tell you something.
I didn't think, I know when we talked about it before the season, I said, I don't think they're quite there pitching-wise yet. But they are, you know, credit to them. And so you're right about the homegrown stuff. I guess it's just so hard to do.
Yeah.
And I don't know why. We used to say Tampa Bay because they had the first-round pick every year.
Yeah.
But that's not the case anymore. They've been good for a number of years now, and they're still bringing these guys up.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, good for them. So they do something that I guess certainly the Yankees and the Mets don't do, among other teams.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it shows you the way the game is changing, because Tampa Bay has been a huge nemesis for the Yankees in recent years. The team with all the money is getting their ass handed to them every time in the playoffs by the tiny market team, because they're developing players well. They're using them very well with analytics. Kevin Cash being one of the smartest analytics guy out there. And notwithstanding what I agree was a brain fart in the 2020 World Series, I'm going to give you that one. But by and large, he gets the most out of his guys. And it's one of these things here where with Texas, man, you raise an excellent point, because if somebody would have come to us Nostradamus style, we did our preseason thing and said, when you guys record in mid to late July that Texas will be in first place with such and such record, I would have said, oh, okay, wow. So Jacob DeGrom at that point is like 17-0 with a .033 ERA, right? That's got to be. And they've gotten nothing from him. That's an amazing point that you raise. Now, that is something that's going to hurt them in the years to come, because, again, that could be the greatest sunk cost contract of all time. And that's going to be money that you can't put into other players there. So that is something where, yeah, it might bite them. But it's an interesting thing when you're looking at the race for teams to become the team of the 2020s here. Again, I'm not gonna necessarily make too much out of this. I'm not gonna say that MLB is where the NBA is yet, because the NBA, make no mistake about it, is definitely going in that direction. I can't believe it took until now that I think every NBA team now has a G League affiliate. It took until now for that to even be the case. So they haven't taken player development as seriously as the NHL has with their minor leagues, and of course their relationship with the junior leagues as well. MLB with their multiple levels of minor leagues here. The NBA only now is getting at this point. That's what allowed a smart guy like Pat Riley and smart people like the guys in Denver to say, oh, okay, well, if the rest of the league is going to be asleep, we'll just go develop players. And like now it's going to be a copycat league, because a hard cap is going to dictate that it is so. There's no change in Major League Baseball. Like the changes we're talking about in the game on the field, I don't know, are necessarily driving us further in that direction. But it's a thing where, again, if you're a team like the Yankees, where you're getting to be, I mean, they're not quite at the point of being as bloated and inefficient as they were in the mid to late 2000s. which, again, before they went out and got Sabathia and Teixeira and bounced back and won the 2009 World Series. That was kind of a low point for them, relatively speaking, in this 21st century run, as far as being bloated and inefficient. And obviously, they've had a farm system that's produced some gems in recent years. But it's one of these things where, you know, they got to be taking a look around and a lot of these other teams and saying, we cannot be in a position where we're getting out-hustled and out-developed by franchises like Tampa Bay and Houston and Atlanta and everyone else. Baltimore is sort of in the position Tampa Bay was in previously of like, I'm going to need to see them prove that they can do this once they stop having the built-in high picks in there. But they have such depth in terms of top prospects at the top of their system. I'm inclined to give them the benefit of the doubt already, because they're very, very deep in guys that can be potential franchise players. And you don't get that purely off of the first, second, or third pick in the draft every year. So Baltimore, I think, to an extent, has been proving it with some of their other picks here as well. But it is really going to be an interesting thing here, and that some markets that have long been dormant in Major League Baseball, like Baltimore and Cincinnati bouncing back, markets that have been strong like St. Louis, because St. Louis has been, let's face it, kind of hit and miss on player development in recent years. They've had some guys come up, but then they've had some other guys kind of fizzle out. One of their top ones, sadly, unfortunately, I can't believe it's like a decade now, actually passed away in that accident in the Dominican Republic. He was supposed to be a key guy for the next decade or so. So it's one of these things where I think more and more and more it's going to be the case. And you look at a guy like Steve Cohen with the Mets, and is he going to learn that lesson and prioritize that as strongly as he prioritizes the win now aspect of this? Because I think trying to flip a switch to win now is going to be getting harder and harder and harder if you don't have that homegrown base.
Yeah, I think it's a good point, but I think Steve Cohen just strikes me as throw money at it, and maybe that'll fix it.
Yes.
Certainly so far, anyway.
Well, and listen, and I used to commiserate with our own Russ Cohen that, like, he and I were in the same boat all those years, because the Wilpons here, as much as they never admitted the Bernie Madoff financial hangover, we all know it was there. And then my tribe being owned by the freaking Dolan family, which throws nickels around like manhole covers. I remember hearing, this is back in the old Sports Talk Network days, that I think somebody had mentioned that, like, the Dolans were having, like, or I guess it was the one that, was it Larry Dolan or Paul Dolan, whoever it was, that supposedly somebody mentioned at the station about they're having home renovations done, and I was like, what, putting pay toilets in the guest suite? You know, I mean, that's the way these people operate. But so I'm sure for somebody like Russ Cohen, it's a mixed blessing, because his Mets are now spending money. But, you know, you want it to be like good Steinbrenner rather than bad Steinbrenner, right? It all depends on, you know, who you're getting when you're spending the money here. So, you know, in looking at this, and then it was sort of one of our themes writ large, I guess, in looking at the 2023 season of player development, I'm inclined to agree with what you said before about Atlanta and Tampa Bay for the World Series. They look like the best picks here right now. I'll stick with my pick of the Braves to win the World Series. How do you see it?
I'm going to stay with the Braves only because I just don't think Tampa Bay. I don't know if it's in the culture now. We're there. I'll say it again. To me, the closest they ever were was Game 6 with Blake Snell on the mound, and they took him out. I think that hurt a lot more people than Blake Snell. People forget, literally, I think, two or three batters later, they were losing.
Yeah.
Sure. Which is why it sticks out, I think, to so many people, especially if you're a Tampa Bay fan, because it's not like, you know, he brought a guy in, he got out of a jam, and then the next inning they scored two runs.
Right.
They were winning when Snell walked off, and I think it was three batters later they were losing. And so it's kind of hard. I'll say it again. It's like throwing a pass in the Super Bowl into the end zone when you got a running back who hasn't been stopped all day. They could have put nine in the box every time Beast Mode got hit. He moved forward in that game. And you just look at it as a fan just watching the game, and you're like, sometimes these geniuses, and Kevin Cash is an excellent manager, don't get me wrong, but he got won over by the stats, you know, third time through the order. That's what he kept saying, third time through the order. This guy's pitching a game he may never pitch again. That good, I mean.
Sure.
That dominant, that day. And so sometimes you got to go with the eye test, I think. And I think a lot of these hardcore rhythmic guys just go no matter what. And then afterwards, they said it was the right move. I might do it again.
Yeah. Well, everybody sticks to it on that. And by the way, and I've always been, I'm harsh like a lot of people are on the whole thing with the choice that Pete Carroll made, as long as we're getting this time from you a cross-sport analogy here with the Super Bowl. The one thing I will say is 9 in the box equals 18 hands coming right at that football. So I don't know that that's the risk-averse thing that everybody thinks. But having said that, throw a fade. You know what I mean? You don't throw it to the middle of the end zone. Throw a fade in the corner.
I said right at the time, because, of course, you know, it's the Patriots and my son, the diehard Patriots fan. I said right after the play, I said, if you had just faked the handoff to Lynch, if you had just faked, there'd be two guys waving their arms in the end zone wide open.
Absolutely.
You had to do was fake it, and they didn't even have the sense to do that. So there are two levels to me of stupidity. And the first one would be throwing a pass with no fake to Lynch. But if you're going to do it and still want to win the game, I think if they had faked it to him, you'd have nine guys like diving at the center position.
Yes.
And you'd have the tight end or even a guard, a tackle who was, you know, put in as an eligible receiver, which nobody ever knows or hardly ever hears. They both would have been waving their arms in the end zone wide open if they had just faked the pass. Thank goodness they didn't. Well, if you're a Patriots fan, I'm not, but my son is. And that, you know, that's just one of the all-time, to me, still to this day, incredible screw-ups of all time.
Well,
and you saw, what's his name's face? Sherman. You saw Sherman's face right after the play. It was like he was at a horror movie and just got scared. It was like so unbelievable and so scary if you're the defense.
Yeah.
And that's what happened. They just literally threw it away. I'll close on that. They threw it away.
Well, yeah. And that's one of those things where I'm trying to think of the guy's name. Was it Chris Wallace or the tall guy that had like the career day that was like the Timmy Smith of that Super Bowl?
Matthews, I think. Was it
Chris
Matthews.
Chris Matthews. Yes, that's right. That's right. Good old Mr. Hardball. And that guy was like 6'5". He was having a career day. Fade to him in the corner of the end zone. And that was like, you know, the biggest out-of-nowhere story since Timmy Smith in one of those Super Bowls. So, you know, I just, and equally inexplicable in the long run, as it turns out. But, you know, we shall see how the rest of the season plays out here. And if it plays out with the excitement of that Super Bowl, it very well might. So, look forward to convening with you. And now we'll bring our own FDH Lounge dignitary, Ken Detweiler, back in the mix here once we come up on the playoffs. So, always a pleasure getting to talk with you, Steve Callis, on many things. I'm sure we'll be talking about something before the end of the baseball season here on the show. Thank you, as always, for being available, my man.
Same here, Rick. Always a pleasure.
Love doing it with you, buddy. Thanks so much. And thank you, everybody, for checking out FDH Lounge mini episode 1632.